Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Wednesday, we'll talk about the best organic gardening methods on How Homeopathy Helps to Grow Great Gardens, a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Bruck and international expert agro-homeopath Kavi Raj. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts and questions. Let's go!
I'm there.
Okay, this is our show. I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community. I'm speaking with our regular co-host, Kavi Raj, the author of the international best-selling book, Homeopathy for Farm and Garden, which has been translated into 7 languages. And it is possible that Dr. Robert Bruck, NC State University professor of environmental science and technology and plant pathologist, may be another special guest coming on to have a conversation with us. And you know that Kavi Raj is renowned around the world for his work in the field of agro-homeopathy, which is a new-sounding, new-fangled thing to many people. But to homeopaths, it's getting to be more popular. And Kavi Raj is the one who has sort of invested his life into this and got the word out that this is something that we can do to improve our environment and our crops, in our hobby flower gardens, vegetable gardens. And he is also, besides a world traveler, and right now I believe he's in Toronto, he's also an internet traveler, very outspoken on the issues of genetically modified foods and environmentalist. He is for freedom to choose natural products, and please do petition with that particular issue. And he's also involved with truth in product labeling. Maybe he is a little bit like you and me, but one thing that he is special, he is an activist and has started the website CAM United, One Voice. It is a cause.com at causes.com. So complementary and alternative medicine is high on our list of freedom to choose. And I'm just so pleased that we are able to connect with Kavi Raj since he's not often always available. I hope you can hear the sound okay, Kavi. We were working on our telephone connection. And we have no sound for some reason. Let me try again. Hold on. Do we have any sound coming in?
Can you hear me?
Yes, no? I do. I do hear you now. Okay, good.
Okay.
Well, I introduced you as a freedom fighter and an activist. And also an author who is very respected in the field of agro-homeopathy. And we're going to be talking about that today and learning about the publication, the outcoming of your new book, or it's a revision of your old book. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's actually a complete revision.
Well, we're very excited to learn about it. I was just surfing around on the website and finding that people have already begun to post comments and post their experiences with these special remedy products that will help people to improve their garden and their plant, the health of their plants. So let's start from the beginning. You said this is a complete revision of your original book.
Yes. The original book was alphabetical. And that was quite a bit inconvenient to use. You know, you had to leaf a lot through the book if you were looking for remedies that cover one problem. And so this time I thought, let's do it differently. Of course, the introduction and everything remains the same. We talk about agriculture and about the foundation, although I've expanded on that. And we have more on soil structure. Plant structure and tissues is not so much different. And then we have treatment of plant diseases arising from nutrient imbalances. So I begin with the nutrients. I begin in the soil. Yeah, and so there we have a list of, a good 30 remedies that can be used for nutrient problems in the soil. And then I thought, okay, now let me see. We have used companion plants as homeopathic remedies, so we have a separate chapter on that. And then we have plant pests. Yeah, first we explain what is a pest and what different kinds of pests are there, and then we have general insect remedies, and they come from plant and insect sources, like there are spider poisons, and there is a nozode of the slater, as they call it. It's also called the pill bug. Yeah, mm-hmm. And then we have some plants, and also Bacillus thuringiensis, which is used in regular agriculture in massive doses. But when you use it potentized, then it works just as well.
And what is that one?
Bacillus thuringiensis.
Okay.
And that is, what they nowadays genetically engineer crops with. They put the Bacillus thuringiensis in the plant, and then it produces its own pesticide. The problem is that the bees don't like it. Yeah, and you cannot feed the bees poison pollen, after all. Yeah, so if you use it in a homeopathic dose, then you don't have those problems.
Can I ask the difference? I mean, why is it that when they go into the DNA, what do they do? They hybridize it.
They splice it up, and they put the Bacillus thuringiensis in between, and then put it back together, and then the plant will produce the Bacillus thuringiensis through its leaves, through its fruits, through its pollen, everywhere, even in the roots.
And how is that different from the homeopathic method? And what? And you're using a low potency? You're using a 6C or a 6X or what?
Yeah, I use a 6X.
Okay.
And, of course, we do 10 drops on the liter. We give that 50 succussions and then mix it with 25 liters. Yeah, so there is very small chance that even in the 6X that you have too many things there. Yeah, the dose is so small that the pest doesn't recognize it as a threat. Yeah, and takes it up. Yeah, and then it starts to work. And in the same way, if you have it in the raw form in the plant, that the plant produces it itself, then the insect does notice the difference, because I have seen a little film of a bee who comes in a field with genetically modified corn, yeah, and it goes into the flower and takes one taste and immediately backs out and tries to rub it all off, because the bees know the difference.
Well, how does the homeopathic potentized solution work differently?
It works differently because we have first triturated everything, and when you triturate everything, then you rub off electrons from a molecule, and these electrons, they have a charge, yeah, and that charge is a negative charge, because electrons have a negative charge. And then this is passed on to the lactose, and the lactose passes it on to the water. So what you use is more the energy field of the disease state than anything that is directly gross material. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All living beings are bipolar electromagnetic fields also, whereby the brain and the nervous system is in humans is the plus and the body is the minus. And in each cell, the nucleus of the cell is the plus and the plasma is the minus. So we know that everything has an energy field because Montagnier with his DNA passing on from one glass to the other without even going in there shows that the electromagnetic energy is there.
Mm-hmm. So I guess in a way you have answered my question. There is a means of communication between living things, between the plants and the insects, the plants and their environment. Right. And the mode of communication has been changed, whether it is a potentized remedy which is given to the plant, which takes it up in a completely different way than something that is being genetically modified to change the actual inner structure of that being in some way to hybridize it, in a, you might say. So I think we could, let's save this because it sounds like it could be a very, very good philosophical discussion. But in the meantime, let's go ahead and learn a little bit more about your book. How long did it take to make all of the changes? The first edition came out, I think, maybe 10 or 12 years ago. And
2006 came the first one, so that's only 5 years ago.
Oh, 5 years ago. Okay, five years ago, but you started studying longer than that.
Oh, yeah. I've been at it now for 25 years.
Okay.
And from the start, the first book was mainly to save my own skin. If the knowledge is out there, then it's not worthwhile getting rid of me. Yeah. So that was the main reason, and I wrote that rather fast. And the second one has been growing over the years, doing things. And I was thinking, okay, if I bring out a new edition, then it has to be more logically organized. Yeah. And so what I've done further is treatment of the crucifers, the brassicas. Yeah. Treatment of the cucurbits, the cucurbita. Then the treatment of the grasses, the gramina. And then treatment of the pulses, the leguminosa or the fabacia, and then the nightshades, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then each one has some remedies in there, yeah. And there's only one, but the others can also be used, of course, because it is in the general description, in the characteristics that we say for what plants a remedy can be useful. Yeah. And then I have the next chapter is remedies for aphids and scale insects. And there again, I go into crucifers and in cucurbitas and the solanaceas. And then the remedies for beetles and treatment of nightshades. Yeah. And then remedies for white flies, they are general remedies. Remedies for caterpillars, that we have for crucifers and we have for pulses. And then the remedies for nematodes and other worms. Yeah, and mainly on the roses and some on the mints.
Mm-hmm.
And then treatment of crucifers for mites. Yeah. Because they have the most problem with mites. And then remedies for snails and slugs, that's for all types of plants. And then bacterial, viral, and fungal diseases. Yeah.
Okay.
And then
after that, you have more.
After that, we go again into brassicas, cucurbitas, graminas, laminate. Labiate, the solanacea, the leguminosa, the rosacea, and the vitacea, yeah, the grapevines. Yeah, so there is a whole bunch of remedies in there. There is 108, I think. And then we have a chapter on injuries, weeds, and weed remedies. And then finally, we have a repertory and an index of remedies and nutrients, and then an index of pests and diseases, list of abbreviations, bibliography, and images. Yeah, and mm-hmm. So there are 30 more remedies in there, and it is much easier to use because now you can say, okay, there is this on my cauliflowers. Let me see. And then you go to, oh, where are the cauliflowers? Where are the brassicas? Oh, okay, I have caterpillars on my brassicas. Let's see what is there. Yeah? And mm-hmm. So then things are much easier to find. It's much more user-friendly. Yeah? And it's much better illustrated than the first one. The first one had 2 blocks of illustrations, and here the illustrations are within the text, so you can recognize things much easier.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like a recipe book.
Yeah, you could say so, although it is not a recipe book. Yeah, it is still a full materia medica. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for instance, take a remedy like camphor for caterpillars. I should have actually included there some Bucus nigra. I must have left that out, because I don't see it. Yeah. But
which one? Yeah. What was
that
missing?
Is for the caterpillars here. I just look at the table of contents, because that's all I have here at the moment. Yeah.
Right.
But I have the German version here, which actually came out before the English, because that was last year, isn't it? No, year and a half ago, or maybe 2 years already. Yeah. That was already a translation of this, and I've expanded this further. But I see that for the next printing, we have to put in Sambucus nigra.
Right. It sounds like you're going to have to do another update in addition, especially when people start to write in all of their experiences.
Yes.
Seems that. Yeah, so Dr. Bruck is on the line. I'm going to open it up, and if he has any comments or questions, besides congratulations.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you, Bob. How are you?
Good, congratulations on your new book. I'm anxious to read it. I do have a question. One of the things that I study and teach is the area of environmental toxicology or ecotoxicology.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I have been noticing is a trend that's been of increasing importance and concern over the past couple of years. When we think about even a decade ago, we talked about the horrible pesticides that were out there, with particular emphasis on insecticides, fungicides,
yes,
bactericides, rodenticides, things like that. But all that seems to be almost fading in comparison to the amount of literature and warnings coming out recently about herbicides. The big issue, and I sent Debbie an article an hour ago, published in today's newspaper, is that the, quote, safe herbicide Roundup of our good friends Monsanto is now being banned around the world, because it sounds like the same old drug stories with the Food and Drug Administration. If you recall, Roundup has been around now for 20 years, and it was always considered to be the ultimate safe herbicide.
Yeah.
And as you know, perhaps our listeners don't, there's 3 times as much herbicide by both weight and volume sold worldwide every year than any other type of pesticide. It's the most ubiquitous pesticide. So Roundup was considered to be the safe one because, quote, as soon as it hit soil, it was decomposed, it was biocycled, it was out of the system. And now there's evidence that it's not only around for as long as 7 to 9 years in the environment after it's used, and of course now we have all the Roundup ready, but now they're talking about actual human toxicology, that it's causing damage to humans that are exposed to fields used with the, quote, safe Roundup pesticide. So that leads me to my question. The thing that I'm really interested about is, can homeopathy be used in a garden or an agronomic situation to control weeds?
Yes.
Tell me about it.
Well, I use mainly Juglans nigra. Juglans nigra is a tree under which practically nothing wants to grow.
Black walnut, right.
Yeah, and the walnut releases an alkaloid called euglone. And the euglone is a seed inhibitor for most weeds and many other plants also. Yeah, some are stimulated by it, like corn, but most are simply suppressed up to 7 months in a homeopathic dose. And I've been using that around a housing estate in England, and several other farmers have already used it in India. And they are very happy with it, because if you spray it lightly on the soil before you plant anything else, then it will soak into the soil, and as you know, seeds are always quite close to the surface, and these seeds will be completely inhibited from germination. And 72 hours later, everything is being taken up, and the bit that the sun can reach has been destroyed by UV, and then you can plant your own crop. And
so it's a pre-emergent herbicide,
corn afterwards,
right?
If you plant corn afterwards, the corn grows bigger and gets bigger ears.
Wow. I mean, that seems to be really important information, and it seems like it's an area where there needs to be more research, because considering how much of this material, and some of them we've known to be deadly for years, like atrazine, that we spray all over the world at this time because weeds are a major problem. It seems to me that this is going to be a new era where we've got to be very concerned about the use
of
these chemicals in terms of our food supply.
Mm. Yeah, and also they have noticed that both atrazine and glyphosate are still taken up by the plant.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. So it is not that once it is sprayed that the plant will not take it up. It takes it up, and the breakdown of glyphosate is in many instances quite poisonous by itself. Yeah, it's a bit like the organophosphates.
Because this is shocking news. Because as I said, I mean, in the courses I teach for decades.
Yeah.
I've been sort of putting glyphosate or Roundup in its own category of being a remarkably safe compound, okay?
Yes.
And, of course, now it's ubiquitous due to the Roundup Ready crops that are grown.
Yes.
Literally 90% of our...
Too.
Right. And there's more, exactly. Now it's alfalfa they just came out with. And if we're going to be using this, and now people are saying that the latest scientific data shows it's anything but safe, we are talking about hundreds of millions of gallons of this stuff being sprayed around, where we've got to find alternatives. And if homeopathy
is
going to help.
Dr. Huber was the one who blew the lid on that.
Yes, yes.
Yeah,
but it's
I have the article right in front of me.
Okay.
I said I have the article right in front of
me. Yes, I'm looking at the article that I just sent Debbie today.
And
this article is about how the city of Boulder, Colorado, has just banned, the first American city to ban Roundup from use in the city, due again to the same reasons that we're talking about right now, for plants, animals, and now they're talking about human infertility and cancer being induced by the use of Roundup. So this is a whole new game, and as I said, that's in today's newspaper. Very interesting.
I have actually, from a couple of years ago, I put up on hpatty.com, I put up a page called Monsanto Again. And there I already published studies on glyphosate, and that's like 2 years ago.
Well, you were ahead of your time.
Ah.
Well, it's you know, we think very differently in terms of time span. The Earth has been around an awfully long time. Plant development has been evolving. And when we talk about just 2 years, 2 years ago, we're saying is a long time ago. But in some ways it is, because we cannot sit idly by and allow these things to happen. We have to take action, because it's affecting our environment. It's affecting humanity. It's affecting the animals and the chain of the biology.
Yeah, the food chain.
The food chain and everything else.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah. Let me quote from this article. There's two quotes. One, I'll just read it because it speaks for itself. Talking about Roundup now, quote, "The chemical has been used for so long, however, that attitudes like this pervade. It's hard for me to imagine that there was something bad with Roundup. Wouldn't we have known about it 20 years ago?" That quote came from a Delaware farmer who uses Roundup on all 2,000 acres that he farms. Next paragraph. Apparently, this is really important. People don't realize that in the United States, chemicals are treated with an innocent until proven guilty regulatory approach.
Yes.
Roundup is by no means the first chemical that the EPA has been forced to take a second look at, only after decades of harming the environment and people's health. So
yeah,
in other
like
words,
DEP.
What it's saying is that, you know, basically all these chemical companies come out with these things, and of course they present their own data, very important, showing that it is safe and effective, and we say, oh, all right, that's fine, we'll use it, rather than there being the opposite idea, known as the precautionary principle, where if you're going to be introducing a poison into the environment, you have to prove that it is safe before you're given a label to be able to use it. And as I said, to me, being an agricultural scientist, this is really shocking news, because I was able to say that about just about every chemical on the market other than Roundup. And now the biggie, okay, the multi-billion-dollar herbicide, the data is coming out that it is harmful to the environment, animals, human beings, the entire food chain, and in addition, it does not disappear within a matter of hours. Rather, it's a matter of years before it is decomposed.
Yes. And also, the farmers, they say, "We have witnessed the deterioration in the plant health of corn, soybean, wheat, and other crops recently, with unexplained epidemics of sudden death syndrome of soybean."
Right.
"Gosse's wilt of corn and take all of small grain crops the last 2 years. And at the same time, there has been an increasing frequency of previously unexplained animal, cattle, pig, horse, and poultry infertility and miscarriages. And these situations are threatening the economic viability of both crop and animal producers."
Fascinating.
Right, and Kaviraj is reading from a website.
I'm reading from a different blog.
Mobilization for Climate Justice.
Right.
On their Newswire line, and the title of that article is "Why is Damning New Evidence About Monsanto's Most Widely Used Herbicide Being Silenced?" And I think that probably Mike Adams on Natural News is also linking to this website, as he is about a couple of other issues that there's a lot of silencing about the pharma drugs. So what is important here that we're learning is what we have been doing has been taking us down the wrong path, harming our environment without really knowing ahead of time what's going to happen, whereas we have this opportunity for all small farmers, home gardeners, or even a larger gardener or in the business and industry of agriculture to test sections of their fields, to get involved in agrohomeopathy. And one of the ways they might be interested in starting is to get the book, And I was wondering, is the book only available through the Narayana is the actual publishing house that produced the book?
Yes, and there is a lady here in Canada who does the North American distribution.
Okay.
And they list it on Amazon?
I don't know. I haven't seen that yet, but I think it will be there pretty soon.
Okay.
That would be very convenient.
So the way that we have it right now, there is a full page notification on HWC, Homeopathy World Community. Just click the link on the front page to the book cover, and it tells all about the book, and it gives you a description. It tells the story, a little life history behind Kaviraj and how he got started with learning about homeopathy and plants. And so we now know that we can get the book from Narayana, eventually from Amazon in the future. And I don't know, you'll have to give me the contact for the woman in Canada. And
yes.
Then we also have Mark Moody in the UK. And what book does he have available? Your original book only?
Yes, the original book.
Okay. And there's plenty of those to go around, and they can work too, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a lot of options out to learn more about it and to have something on your library shelf that you can take out in the field with you, take a look at the pictures, take a look at what you need to do for each plant with full instructions. And he has redesigned the book, the new edition, so it's easier to use, easier to locate the information that you're looking for. And then also, what we have been talking about, to me, means that we're going to have a great impact on understanding and the acceptance of homeopathy through the use of these remedies on plants. Kaviraj, could you tell us more about the scientific nature of it?
Well, the scientific nature of it is, of course, based in the law of similars, which some people don't accept as a principle, but that doesn't really matter. The facts speak for itself. The main thing is that the science behind it is, how shall we put it? It is a proven system of medicine for the last 200 years. For the last 200 years, it has made success after success. That is one of the reasons why it is not very much liked by Big Pharma, and why the.
We're losing the sound. He just cut out. I wonder if he just did something.
Hello?
With his. Oh yeah,
he's back.
We lost you for a moment. What I was thinking, Kavi, is that, you know, we hear all the typical things about homeopathy. We know that it has been around since the time of Hahnemann and before, used naturally, and that homeopaths consider it very systematic and a medicinal form, highly regarded. Now, the question is, the rest of the world may be looking with a skeptical eye. And what I'm getting at is, we're not testing humans, we're not testing animals, we're testing plants. And
yes.
So it seems very objective in its nature.
It is. It is.
Something you can't argue with it, right?
No, if you have a problem and you have a remedy that covers that problem and you give it and the plant recovers, what is that? Is that placebo? How can that be placebo? Are we such great magicians that we can fool plants with placebo? If they think like that, then they're more superstitious than, the caveman of 20,000 years ago. Yeah?
Right.
So for me, it is very simple. Here is a plant, and the plant has a problem. I have tested the remedies. I have tested the remedies in provings, and I have tested the remedies in clinical situations. Yeah? And in the clinical situation, if 9 out of 10 times you have a good result and 1 out of 10 times you don't, are the nine good results not properly done, and the one without result is properly done? No, because they all follow the same protocol. Yeah. So it is very simple. Sometimes you have something that you have not taken into consideration, and then you may fail. Yeah, like for instance, we were in the botanical gardens in Dublin a couple of weeks ago, and we treated there a massive copper beech, yeah, which has the Phytophthora disease. And so the man who was supposed to come with us had been called away, so we didn't have the full picture. And so what did we give? Because the plant was bleeding its juices out, we gave it carbo-veg, loss of vital fluids, logical thinking on the visible symptoms. But then the 2 weeks later, we went there again, and the tree was still the same. But then we had also a talk with the head of the botanical gardens, and then we found out that actually where that tree sits, there is only 4 meters topsoil, and then there is a big limestone crop, and limestone is very alkaline, yeah. And the beech likes an acidic soil, but he's got only 4 meters, so his roots are going horizontal, and it's also at the low point in the park. Yeah, and around it are, of course, farms and other fields where people spray herbicides and this and that, and so that accumulates in the water table. And so this tree sits very close to the water table and gets all that stuff in there. And as we know, that things like glyphosate, for instance, they reduce the plant's immunity, yeah, they make it susceptible to fungal and bacterial and viral diseases, and so that's what's really the matter. And besides that, sitting on top of a limestone crop, it gets an alkaline injection, which makes it weaker too. So we thought, okay, then first we shall have to give something different. We have to give Calcarea carbonica, because it sits on limestone, yeah. And then after that, we can give phosphoric acid to control the fungus, yeah, because that's what they do in regular agriculture. They use a phosphonate to control that type of fungus, because that's the only thing they have. And then they can stop its spread, but they can't get rid of it. But with homeopathic remedies, as I've seen in Australia, you can get rid of these fungal diseases. And I've seen it in Holland, in The Hague, and we've seen it with the chestnut also in Dublin, because we were in a park, and there we got permission to treat some chestnuts, and they were already treated by the end of last year. And so this year they are green, and they don't have hanging leaves, but they don't flower very much. Yeah, so we had to give it the dose of phosphor to help it with the flowering. Yeah, so we see that all these plant diseases everywhere, the trees are getting sick, and that is, according to my understanding, is too much glyphosate in the soil, yeah, and too much glyphosate in the groundwater, and so they become susceptible to these diseases.
So are you saying to us that with the use of homeopathic remedies, we can antidote the effects of all of these multitude of chemicals that have been built up over time?
Yeah, I would say if you would potentize glyphosate, if you would potentize Roundup, you would have probably a nozodal antidote.
Okay. So you're saying to actually deal with the overdose of that particular chemical, that to do an isopathic application?
Yes. Or,
okay. So I guess what I was wondering originally, whether the use of the typical polycress and the other helpful plant remedies would handle that in the water, but you're saying you have to neutralize the soil from all of the chemicals? Is that what you're getting at?
Well, not so much neutralize the soil, but neutralize at least the effects. The soil can break it down over many years, yeah. But the effects of these chemicals, they will be visible in the plants. They will be visible in the bacteria. Some bacteria are helped by it. Others are completely destroyed. So there comes a disbalance in nutrient availability. All these negative effects can be antidoted. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, at least you maintain the soil in a more balanced form, while the problem is still there. And as Bob was explaining, it is in the soil for a decade or maybe even longer. We don't know. It's been in use for 2 decades. Yeah.
Yep.
And so I would say. It will take us 2 decades to get it out of the soil. But during those 2 decades, we can use the nozote at least to neutralize the effects.
Well, you were just getting at the next question that I have, which is, how often do you feel like we're going to have to be doing these applications to neutralize the effects? Will it have to be many times during one season, or continually every spring or fall?
I would say before you plant your crop, you would have to do that, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can plant your crop, and then the effects have been neutralized already. If then the plant needs another dose, then you can do that. You can also wait till after you've planted and then give it those, yeah, so that the plant automatically is strengthened by it. And then the way we make the remedies, the effects last for up to 6 months, and most plants take about 6 to 9 months to mature, yeah. And so I would say that one dose in the season is enough.
Okay. That kind of answers that.
It's not like the regular stuff, which has to be sprayed 16 times in a season. Yeah. It is much better for the farmer. He keeps a lot more money in his pocket that he doesn't spend on poisons, and he cleans the soil in the process.
Kavi, I have a question for you. You're the world recognized expert on this area of agrohomeopathy, and one of the things, of course, as a scientist that I'm always interested in is the whole area of additional research. I just sent Debbie an email of a page I found dealing with natural remedies. I'll just read from this, okay? The question is, what natural herbicides do exist can even do more harm than good if applied under the wrong conditions? However, there are plants in nature that act as natural herbicides, such as black walnut, sunflowers, sagebrush, and spotted knapweed. The question I have is, do you or do you know of anyone that is actually doing additional research? We already know about the things that even Hahnemann wrote about, but are there additional studies going on with natural substances to be used homeopathically in this whole area of pesticides?
Yeah, I would say there is quite a bit of research that is evidenced from different institutions. They have done studies of straw. Wheat straw, for instance, is also a weed suppressor. And in the past, the farmer would leave his straw on the land, and then, for instance, plant his next crop. Yeah.
Right.
Now, the funny thing with wheat straw is that not only does it keep the weeds down, but it is a stimulant for brassicas. Yeah.
Ah, okay.
And there are other studies that they do with rice, because in rice you have allele chemicals that also suppress weeds. And now they want to isolate them and turn them into herbicides.
Good, good.
Well, I think they will make the usual stupid mistake and give far too massive doses and create other problems. That is the usually Bass Ackwards way they go about.
Well, you know,
yes,
you know,
I was about
to
say.
It's true that more is better in the language of selling products.
Yes.
I was about
and
to say.
But
they,
as we say, no, less is better. Less is
we
always
say less
better.
Is better.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yeah.
If indeed they find
better,
all kinds of compounds that are
yeah.
active, you know, the first thing that Monsanto will do is pick it up, concentrate it, put it in a bottle, and sell it to you for $500.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so.
Well, it's good to know that the research is going on because it seems
yeah,
that there's such potential.
Yeah, plenty of research going on.
Because,
and,
you know, the reality is that we're learning day by day that all of the standard chemicals that we developed after World War II and continue to use today, every time we take a harder look at them, we keep finding more and more problems.
Yes,
whereas the establishment and the FDA and the EPA have kept telling us it's safe, it's safe, it's safe, and it's not.
Well, we're going to...
Yeah.
We're going to be hearing from the individuals out there in their own personal field, do on the ground, doing their own work, because on the Narayana, it's Narayana Publishing House site, there's a link on the HWC webpage to it, there is a live forum, a place where people who have gotten Kaviraj's book have used it for particular problems in their garden. And so I'm reading here, it says experience with aphids. Then so they're going to be documenting all of the success stories that Aphidius, which is, I don't know how to pronounce it, ichneumon fly.
Ichneumonous fly, yeah.
Yes, it says lice. Small fruit trees in a container were raised in the house on the windowsill. The leaves were infested with lice and watered once with Aphidius. Or how do you pronounce that?
Aphidia.
Aphidia? Okay.
Let me see.
A-P-H-I.
I have to find where the aphids are. I have something here.
Right. So this person used this, and after a few days, the lice disappeared. A
yes.
small damsel tree remained lice-free.
Aphidius.
Yeah, I didn't know where to put the accent. Is it syllable or syllable? And and the lice returned to the small cherry tree after a while. So he's saying that the treated plant remained lice-free because he used the Aphidius, the ichneumonium fly remedy, not, you know, he didn't just give him some more lice. And then there's another story about the lacewing larva, which could be a big problem for people, and the use of coccinella and chrysoparia.
The green lacewing larva is not a problem, and that's a predator. And it's also against aphids.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was misreading it. That is the name of the remedy. And it's against the aphid problem. So somebody wrote a story. There were green aphids on the tips of the rose shoots. And, of course, this is a big, big... And coccinella 6 was sprayed. And after 3 days, there were no more aphids to be seen. Unfortunately, he says they reappeared, and a further spraying with coccinella did not help. Then I sprayed with the chrysoparia carnea, and the aphids were gone. So how do we know which one to choose when we have more than one potential remedy to
remedy. Yeah. Well, the thing is that generally I recommend as a general thing coccinella. But the chrysoparia, is more specific, so to speak. So on some plants that will work better. Now, he says he did that on roses. My first thing with roses was coccinella because the ladybug was there. Yeah. And so that's how I got my idea. Yeah. And underneath there, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 stories of coccinella.
Right.
Yeah. And then they make a compound. Yeah. A homeopathic combi preparation and have some photos with it. Yeah, before and after. And Liedem for aphids is also somebody has done that. And then tropiole and more nasturtium. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That so they've excellent used results. a number of different
remedies
for a similar problem. And this
is exactly.
This
so
is
you can adjust
learned.
It to the problem.
Yeah. But do you want to elaborate a little bit upon this homeopathic principle? Even with humans, you might be have the same disease label, and yet each person gets an individualized
remedy.
Yeah,
that is because also in nature, we see that in a particular habitat, you have particular plants that grow together, and there are particular insects that are there, you know, predators as well as pests, and a different soil pH, for instance, makes for a different set of plants, and therefore a different set of pests and predators. And so you have to take everything in consideration. What kind of soil do I grow my plant on? Yeah, and what climate am I in? And then I have to see which remedy will fit better. So some remedies fit better on an acid soil, and some remedies will fit better on an alkaline soil, and some better on a neutral. Yeah. So all these things have to be taken into consideration, just like, as with humans, you prescribe on a totality of symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that includes also what kind of weather is it. If it is warm and moist, then you have an aphid explosion. But if you would just have given phosphor or potassium to your plants, then you also get an aphid explosion. So you have to know all these things, and that is described in the book.
What did you say about the if you give the homeopathic remedy or the supplement?
No, if you have given a fertilizer, potassium or phosphor, then you get an explosion of aphids.
Too much.
Yeah. And then because they love that, it's like opening a free McDonald's for them. And then they become the plants become attractive to them. They want to eat them.
I see.
Yeah. And so. In such cases, you have to consider, well, what did I do last? Yeah, and so always the question is, have you given any fertilizer?
We have to be very observant, because as I'm listening to you teach us about making the selection for different remedies for our plants that are sick or have an insect or a fungus or something, I'm wondering if, as nature lovers, we can go in our garden and be observant of what is already there. So the predator that is already there, that would be a clue to us. That might be a good selection for use in the garden.
Exactly. And from that, you can also see, what predator is this? Are there many lacewings? So the lacewings are always after the aphids. And the lacewings also, especially like whitefly on cabbages, yeah? So the Chrysoperia is also good for that kind of stuff.
Okay, the lacewing, you say, would be a good application, homeopathic application for the cabbages and plants
the
that we see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
well, I'm
going
to have to get a book and take a look at what that lacewing larva looks like.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I don't know if they've put it in there, but I try to put, with the name of the remedy, I try to put a picture of the insect itself. So you know, this is Coccinella, this is Aphidius, this is Chrysoperia, yeah. This is Ledum, and this is Tropiolum. Pardon?
Hello? Yeah, so we would definitely be learning. We would definitely be learning our Latin and our scientific terms through the study of your book and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. What other kinds of things do we want to let people know about your new book? How many pages is it? It sounds like it's going to be huge.
It's 376 pages.
Uh huh. And you went earlier in the show, told us about the way it's laid out and the chapters, and that it's much, much easier to use and to find. And there's a index in the front and the back, or a table.
Yeah, there's an index in the back, and there's a repertory in the back. Everything is there to make its use easy.
Right, and then there's one additional thing that we have available on the Narayana website, which is hosting your book and is the publisher. Probably people would want to know what it costs. It's $43, which is a reasonable amount.
$43, and up to the 31st of May, I think it is a bit cheaper.
So you mean up until the end of this month, it's on sale, and then it's going to get, and it's the price is going to go up.
Then the price goes up. Then the price goes up by about $7, I think.
To $50, because this is on opening special. And in addition, there is an excerpt from the book that people can download. It is a PDF file, Adobe PDF.
Yeah, that's actually the table of contents.
Oh, great. And there's a little blurbs about the slugs and the helix toaster on the website. And the other thing that's really fascinating is that there's a space where you've got kits. So you can actually get, after you read the book and realize that you need something, there are a seven-remedy starter kit with some of those remedies we mentioned today, the coccinella, the aphid, and the helix tosta. There's thuja, tenacetum, helix cuprum, and belladonna. So that's a mini starter kit. And then there's a remedy kit with 15 remedies in it. And that has the bacillus that you mentioned today also. Thuringiensis. And there's a 14... That's kind of odd. You have a 15 remedy kit and a 14 remedy kit. And
I don't know about that. That's what they make. Mark Moody also makes a remedy kit with 8 remedies.
Okay.
Yeah, and there you get the original book with it. And that is 60 pounds. And that has Euglams nigra, coccinella, silica, salicylic acid, helix tosta, carbovetch, calendula, and osimum basilicum.
So when you get the book, you automatically get the remedies also?
You have to order the kit. And then you
have to order the kit.
But that is the first edition.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that can still be useful to people.
Of course, that is still useful. But the new one is, of course, much more useful because it is easier to use. It's much more user-friendly.
And
what
it has
you see
new
is
stuff
what
in
you
it.
Get.
Right, huh? And then you also have a set of 30 remedies for plant homeopathy, and that is in a brown artificial leather case. So they come in different cases.
Different sizes.
Different sizes and different selections of remedies, which, depending on what your needs are, you'd have to... We need to ask you, which one would we need?
Which one would you need? Well, I would say... let me see. What do they have?
Depending upon what kind of garden you have, why would you need the 7, 15, or 30 remedy kit? I always go for the one with the most variety.
Yeah.
But you know what? Our time has come to an end for the show. It's been great learning about your book, and I hope people will pay attention a bit to it. And I will see you next Wednesday for, again, How Homeopathy Grows Great Gardens. Thank you so much, Kavi.
You're welcome. And goodbye, everyone.
Thank you for listening to How Homeopathy Helps Grow Great Gardens with co-hosts Kavi Raj Vaikuthanath and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to get some sunshine and light up your life in your garden.